Good morning and welcome to Occupy the Airwaves. Okay, on Monday, Rich and I were talking about the recent revelations that have been coming out, and we were wondering why they were coming out at this time. What did it mean? Were they pushing for a giant war, World War III, with Russia, or were they trying to back out? For instance, the New York Times expose, air quotes, basically the CIA getting the New York Times to say, you know what, we've been in Ukraine for 10 years, even longer, and we've got all these bases right on the Ukrainian border, and we use them to spy on Russia and also to target Russians, right? Why would they say that? That was just really weird. An interesting thing in that is they fingered the head of the GUR, Budinov, who is a particular nasty person, gets along fine with Victoria Nuland. And they said that he was responsible, not just, well, before this, they had said he was responsible for blowing up the Nord Stream pipelines. First, they said it was those people in a yacht, you know, the Gilligan, the skipper too, the millionaire and his wife rented a yacht and went out into the Baltic Sea and planted some explosives. But then they said, but Budinov had been the mastermind of the whole thing. Well, that's an interesting revelation. So he should be in big, big trouble. That's an act of friggin' war. Guess what happened to him? Nothing. We all know who really did it, the United States. Guess what happened to them? Nothing. Germany, Sweden, Norway, they're all too afraid to even say they know who did it. They all quietly backed away, Sweden, and I think it was Norway that were supposedly investigating, and they're like, well, we're done investigating, we can't say who it was. Well, it was a state actor, but we can't say who it was. Well, we all know who it was, and we all know why you can't say. But anyhow, I digress. So the New York Times thing was like kind of weird, and then there was the German generals leak where they discussed how they were going to use German-made missiles to blow up the civilian bridge, the Kursk Bridge, which was another act of war. And why did they allow that to get out? You know that they censor anything they don't want to get out, but that one got out. Why? But all of a sudden, on Tuesday, Victoria Nuland, one of the most evil of the evildoers, but they're all evil. It's just that she came into fame when she was caught on tape. She was the Undersecretary of State at the time under Obama in 2013, 2014. And she was caught on tape talking to Jeffrey Pyatt, the ambassador to Ukraine. And they were finalizing the details of the coup. Of the coup in Ukraine. And they were picking the new leaders, you know, who they were going to put into power in Ukraine afterwards. And then they said, well, they had to run it by Biden for his attaboy. And at one point, Jeffrey Pyatt said, the EU isn't going to like this. And she said she did an expletive, the EU. That's the only thing that the mighty Wolitzer talked about when they talked about this at all. Now, really, she should have been fired for orchestrating a coup. That's blatantly undiplomatic for someone in the State Department and someone that's an ambassador. And yet neither one of them got fired, did they? So why are they firing her now? That's the interesting thing. Maybe she went too far, but how could you go any farther than this? I'm going to play some of that tape so you can hear exactly what she said. Because again, if you've heard about it at all you've heard about is that she said bad things about the EU. But that is not the important part. The important part is this tape proves that the United States was intimately involved in overthrowing the elected government of Ukraine, and that the United States then put in a post-coup government that was more to their liking. And this is the same United States that 2 years later accused Russia of interfering with our sacred elections of the great, wonderful, shining city on the hill. The nerve, the absolute nerve, but they have no shame. And they think that we have no brains. They think we're not going to remember. Well, a lot of us remember. So I'm going to go ahead and play this because, again, if you heard it at all, you've only heard that one part because, ooh, she said a bad word. Yeah, the same bad word you can hear on TV now all the time. Big deal. You know what I'm saying? All right, so I'm going to play the tape that proves that the United States overthrew the elected government of Ukraine. And by the way, they don't call it a coup, they call it the Revolution of Dignity. And they'll tell you it was the highest form of democracy to kill 100 demonstrators and then put in a puppet government. Yeah. Oh, and also, you know what? It has national sovereignty. Mm-hmm. Sure it does. Listen to this and see if you think that.
What do you think?
I think we're in play. The Klitschko piece is obviously the complicated electron here, especially the announcement of him as deputy prime minister. And you've seen some of my notes on the troubles in the marriage right now. So we're trying to get a read really fast on where he is on this stuff. But I think your argument to him, which you'll need to make, I think that's the next phone call we want to set up, is exactly the one you made to Yats. And I'm glad you sort of put him on the spot on where he fits in this scenario. And I'm very glad he said what he said in response.
Good. So I don't think Cleach should go into the government. I don't think it's necessary. I don't think it's a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you think in terms of him not going into the government, just let him sort of stay out and do his political homework and stuff. I'm just thinking in terms of sort of the process moving ahead, we want to keep the moderate Democrats together. The problem is going to be Taniboak and his guys. And, you know, I'm sure that's part of what Yanukovych is calculating on all of this.
I think Yats is the guy who's got the economic experience, the governing experience. He's the guy, you know, what he needs is Cleach and Taniboak on the outside. He needs to be talking to them four times a week. You know, I just think Cleach going in, he's going to be at that level working for Yatsenyuk. It's just not going to work.
Yeah, no, I think that's, you know? I think that's right. Okay, good. Well, do you want us to try to set up a call with him as the next step?
My understanding from that call, but you tell me, was that the big three were going into their own meeting and that Yats was going to offer in that context a 3+1 conversation or 3+2 with you. Is that not how you understood it?
No, I think, I mean, that's what he proposed, but I think just knowing the dynamic that's been with them where Klitschko has been the top dog, he's going to take a while to show up for whatever meeting they've got, and he's probably talking to his guys at this point. So I think you reaching out directly to him helps with the personality management among the three, and it gives you also a chance to move fast on all this stuff and put us behind it before they all sit down and he explains why he doesn't like it.
Okay, good. I'm happy. Why don't you reach out to him and see if he wants to talk before or after?
Okay, will do. Thanks.
Okay, I've now written, one more wrinkle for you, Jeff.
Yeah.
I can't remember if I told you this or if I only told Washington this, that when I talked to Jeff Feltman this morning, he had a new name for the UN guy, Robert Seri. Did I write
yeah.
you that this morning?
Yeah,
okay.
I saw that.
He's now gotten both Seri and Ban Ki-moon to agree that Seri could come in Monday or Tuesday.
Okay.
So that would be great, I think, to help glue this thing and have the UN help glue it and, you know,
beep
the EU.
No, exactly. And I think we've got to do something to make it stick together. But anyway, we could land jelly side up on this one if we move fast. So let me work on Klitschko. And if you can just keep, I think we want to try to get somebody with an international personality to come out here and help to midwife this thing.
So on that piece, Jeff, when I wrote the note, Sullivan's come back to me, VFR, saying you need Biden. And I said probably tomorrow for an attaboy and to get the deets to stick. So
okay.
Biden's willing.
Okay, great. Thanks.
So there you go. Recorded proof that two so-called diplomats in the United States helped overthrow a democratically elected government in Ukraine, picked the people that were going to be there, said that one of them who was a Nazi should be on the outside, not the inside, and then set up the post-coup government. And by the way, Yats was put in, and guess what? A woman named Natasha Jalesko, who was an American citizen of Ukrainian descent, was given Ukrainian citizenship the very next day after the coup, and she became the finance minister of Ukraine because, you know what? No one by the Ukrainian constitution was supposed to be a member of the government unless they were a Ukrainian citizen. No problem! They just made her Ukrainian citizen, because that's how they roll. And then they had the nerve to come back 2 years later and accuse Russia of interfering with our election. Did Russia sit around and pick Trump's cabinet? No, the neocons picked Trump's cabinet. And guess what? They picked some really rotten people. John Bolton, Pompeo, oh, come on now. These are some really rotten people. But that didn't get Victoria Nuland fired, and neither did this. Listen to this.
With regard to Nord Stream 2, we continue to have very strong and clear conversations with our German allies, and I want to be clear with you today. If Russia invades Ukraine, one way or another, Nord Stream 2 will not move forward.
So there you have it, straight from the horse's mouth. So that really, really, really makes me wonder what it was she did that made her very sudden and very unexpected departure happen on Tuesday. Pretty amazing. Well, I thought I would go back and talk about the neocons, since we were talking about the neocons, because Victoria Nuland is one of a very select group of neocons. These are the Project for a New American Century neocons, of which her husband, by the way, was a main author of that particular thing, the one that said what we need to get America back into the war business, because they didn't think Clinton did enough wars, just Iraq and Yugoslavia wasn't enough for them. They said what we need is a galvanizing event like a new Pearl Harbor. Then George W. Bush gets put into power by the Supreme Court. Victoria Nuland, along with many Paul Wolfowitz, Donald Rumsfeld, and the most evil neocon of all, Dick Cheney, John Bolton, they were all there. They came in, and guess what? We had a new Pearl Harbor. 9/11 happened, and boom, America has been in at least two wars ever since. So there you go. So I'm going to read this. This is from VoltaireNetwork.org, and it is from right after the special military operation started 2 years ago, March 5th, 2022. I think it's relevant because it talks about this little group of neocons that was hired by the other neocons. This little group, none of them are elected. Well, neither were, well, Dick Cheney was elected, so yeah, I guess. But most of these people don't get elected. Victoria was never elected to anything. She just kept getting appointed because she was exceptionally evil, and evil is rewarded in this country, administration after administration. She started out under Bill Clinton, and then she was in Russia, including in 1993, when the results of the destruction of the Soviet Union were so horrible for the people of Russia that they tried to overthrow the evil Yeltsin, and she was there to help midwife, as they say, the counter coup and keep the Boris Yeltsin neocons in power. So she worked for Bill Clinton, she worked for Hillary Clinton, and then she went to work for Dick Cheney, because you know what? They're all the same. Yeah, quit thinking, oh, Democrats are so different than Republicans. No. So Victoria Nuland went from working for the Clintons to working for Dick Cheney. And then when the Dick Cheney regime was over, she went to work for Obama. She went to work for the State Department. And as you heard, she was there midwifing the coup in Ukraine. And Joe Biden was the guy in charge. He's the one they had to get the attaboy from because he was put in charge of Ukraine. And so, boy, is that a coincidence that his son Hunter got a cushy job making $85,000 a month for Burisma? What are the odds? Am I right? All right, so this is from Voltaire Net, and this is from 2 years ago. At dawn on February 24th, Russian forces entered Ukraine en masse. According to President Vladimir Putin, speaking on television at the time, this special operation was the beginning of his country's response to, quote, those who aspire to world domination, unquote, and who are advancing NATO's infrastructure to his country's doorstep. During this long speech, he summarized how NATO destroyed Yugoslavia without the authorization of the United Nations Security Council. Well, of course, the Security Council would not be allowed to authorize the destruction of Yugoslavia. But guess who was in the White House really pushing old Bill into blowing up the Serbs? Why, that would be Victoria Nuland. Yeah, very same Vicky. Very same cookies Nuland. We call her because she was handing out cookies on the Maidan during the coup. Back to VoltaireNet. Even bombing Belgrade in 1999. Then he perused the destruction of the United States in the Middle East, in Iraq, Libya, and Syria. Only after this lengthy presentation did he announce that he had sent his troops to Ukraine with the dual mission of destroying the NATO-linked armed forces and ending the NATO-armed neo-Nazi gangs. So you can see that Putin has a habit of giving long history lessons before he gets to his main point. In case you thought the Tucker Carlson interview was unusual, no. Putin has a habit of giving four-hour press conferences. Can you imagine Joe Biden speaking for 4 hours? Huh. Yeah, but anyhow, he does. He'll get up there and he'll answer questions for 4 hours every year. Immediately, all the member states of the Atlantic Alliance denounced the occupation of Ukraine as comparable to that of Czechoslovakia in 1968. The interpretation of the Atlantic Alliance is aimed above all at depriving Russia of its major argument. Although NATO is not a confederation of equals, but a hierarchical federation under Anglo-Saxon command, Russia is doing the same. That's our argument, is that it's refusing Ukraine the possibility of choosing its destiny. It is true that NATO violates the principles of sovereignty and equality of states stipulated in the UN Charter, but it should not be dissolved unless Russia is also dissolved. Perhaps, but probably not. Well, they're still trying to get Russia dissolved. President Putin's speech was not directed against Ukraine or even against the United States, but explicitly against those who aspire to world domination, i.e., and this is this guy's, he's a French guy, Thierry Meissen or something like that. He has a thing about these Straussians, but it isn't just Straussians, as I pointed out. It is neocons. So, on February 25th, President Vladimir Putin called the Kiev leadership a clique of drug addicts and neo-Nazis. During the night of February 25th, 26th, President Volodymyr Zelensky sent a ceasefire proposal to Russia via the Chinese embassy in Kiev. The Kremlin immediately responded by setting out its conditions. 1. Arrest of all Nazis, including Dmitry Yarosh of the White Sector, the Azov Battalion, etc. Removal of all street names and destruction of monuments glorifying Nazi collaborators during the Second World War, such as Stiff and Bandera and the rest of them, and laying down of weapons. Okay, so when they talk about the peace proposals, they usually talk about the one in Istanbul. They forget the one in Minsk, where the Ukrainian Secret Service actually killed their own negotiator because they said he was giving away too much to the Russians, so they just blew him away in the street. Okay, so no one ever talks about the Minsk one, but definitely no one ever talks about how President Zelensky sent a request for a ceasefire during the night of February 25th to 26th. That's one day after Russia invaded. This whole thing could have been over in February of 2 years ago, but the United States said no. But anyhow, so President Zelensky sent a ceasefire proposal to Russia via the Chinese embassy in Kiev. The Kremlin immediately responded and said, you got it as long as you do this. The Atlantic press ignored this event while the rest of the world, which knew about it, held its breath. But you notice the rest of the world is too chicken to talk about that now, right? Because that's how they are. The negotiation failed a few hours later after Washington intervened. Only then would Western public opinion be informed, but the Russian conditions would always be hidden from them. Well, he lives in France. We certainly were not informed of that here in the United States. Let us stop for a minute to consider this group, the Straussians, part of the neocon group, about whom Westerners know little. They were formed by the German philosopher Leo Strauss, who took refuge in the United States during the rise of Nazism and became a professor of philosophy at the University of Chicago. So, according to many accounts, he formed a small group of faithful students to get who he gave oral instruction. The Straussians began forming a political group half a century ago in 1972. They were all members of Democratic Senator Henry Scoop Jackson's staff, including Elliot Abrams, Richard Pearl, and Paul Wolfowitz, three of the most evil neocons ever. There's a whole group of them. They were closely linked to the CIA, but also, thanks to Pearl's father-in-law, Albert Wolfhester, to the RAND Corporation, the think tank of the military-industrial complex. Many of these young people intermarried until they formed a compact group of about 100 people. And Victoria Nuland is married to Robert Kagan, again, as I said, one of the Project for a New American Century people who set up the plans for 9/11 and the wars afterwards. Together, they drafted and passed the Jackson-Vanik Amendment in the midst of the Watergate crisis, which forced the Soviet Union to allow the immigration of its Jewish population to Israel under pain of economic sanctions. This was their founding act. In 1976, Paul Wolfowitz was one of the architects of Team B, charged by President Gerald Ford with assessing the Soviet threat. In other words, the CIA was going, they're not a threat. So they set up another group, Team B, to say they are a threat. And they did the same thing under Reagan. He issued a delirious report accusing the Soviet Union of preparing to take over global hegemony. The Cold War changed its nature. It was no longer a question of isolating and containing the USSR. It had to be stopped in order to save the free world. And of course, in 1991, they did it. They paid off a bunch of traitors in the Soviet Union, like Yeltsin, and they signed away, they dissolved the Union, even though a poll had shown that 80% of the people in the Soviet Union were opposed to that. Democracy? Oh, yeah, that's they'll tell you that's democracy. When three guys sign a paper, and destroy the lives of hundreds of millions of people. Even though these Jossians and New York intellectuals were on the left, supposedly, they put themselves at the service of the right-wing president, Ronald Reagan. It is important to understand that these groups are neither truly right nor left-wing. Some members have switched 5 times from the Democrat Party to the Republican Party and back again. What is important to them is to infiltrate power, whatever the ideology. Elliot Abrams became an assistant to the Secretary of State. He led an operation in Guatemala where he put a dictator in power and experimented with Mossad officers on how to create reserves for the Mayan Indians. Then Elliot Abrams continued his exactions in El Salvador and finally in Nicaragua against the Sandinistas with the Iran-Contra affair. Well, what he did was he helped pay for the Contra terrorist group to terrorize the people of Nicaragua. For their part, the New York intellectuals, now called neoconservatives, created the National Endowment for Democracy and the U.S. Institute of Peace, a mechanism that organized many color revolutions, starting with China with the attempted coup d'etat of Prime Minister Zhao Ziyang and the subsequent repression in Tiananmen Square. At the end of George H.W. Bush's term in office, Paul Wolfowitz, then number 3 in the Defense Department, drew up a document based on a strong idea. After the decomposition of the USSR, the U.S. had to prevent the emergence of new rivals, starting with the European Union. Blowing up the Nord Stream pipeline really helped with that, didn't it? Germany was the industrial powerhouse of Europe, but guess what? It isn't anymore because it doesn't have the energy to run its industry. How about that? So you see, the United States doesn't just have Russia as a target, it also has Europe. And again, when I was talking about last time about the farmers of Europe having their farms shut down so that Monsanto and Cargill and, you know, well, Monsanto's bought out by a German company, Bayer, a chemical company, a drug company, but still, now it's Bayer Monsanto, and they're in there pushing their GMO products, which again is illegal all through Europe, so that what they want to do is throw the European farmers off their farms and then force everyone in Europe to eat food that comes from Ukraine. Oh, and look at that. It just happens to be GMO food. Wolfowitz was undoubtedly the designer of Desert Storm, the operation to destroy Iraq that allowed the U.S. to change the rules of the game and organize a unilateral world. It was during this time that they made up the concepts of regime change and democracy promotion. Gary Schmidt, Adam Schulsky, and Paul Wolfowitz entered the U.S. intelligence community through the Consortium for the Study of Intelligence Working Group on Intelligence Reform. They criticized the assumption that other governments think the same way as the U.S. government. Politicizing intelligence is what Wolfowitz had already done with the B-Team and what he would do again in 2002 with the Office of Special Plans, inventing arguments for new wars against Iraq and Iran. They were removed from power during Bill Clinton's term, except for Victoria Nuland, of course, who was in the Clinton White House, working for Bill and Hillary. They then entered the Washington think tanks. In 1992, William Christo and Robert Kagan, the husband of Victoria Nuland, published an article in Foreign Affairs deploring President Clinton's timid foreign policy and calling for the renewal of a benevolent global hegemony. The following year, they founded the Project for a New American Century, PNAC, at the American Enterprise Institute. In 1994, now an arms dealer, Richard Pearl, a.k.a. the Prince of Darkness. Yeah, you can call Richard Pearl the Prince of Darkness. That's fine, as long as Dick Cheney gets called the Dark Lord. Became an advisor to the president and ex-Nazi Alija Izetbegovic in Bosnia Herzegovina. It was he who brought Osama bin Laden and his Arab Legion, which was the forerunner of Al-Qaeda, from Afghanistan to fight in Yugoslavia. Pearl was even a member of the Bosnian delegation at the signing of the Dayton Accords in Paris. In 1996, members of the PNAC, including Richard Pearl, Douglas Feith, and David Wormser, wrote a study at the Institute for Advanced Strategic and Political Studies for the new Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu. This report advocates the elimination of Yasser Arafat, the annexation of the Palestinian territories, a war against Iraq, and the transfer of Palestinians there. Well, how about that? And guess who's prime minister again of Israel? Why, that very same Netanyahu. The PNAC raised funds for the candidacy of George W. Bush, the son, and published before his election its famous report, Rebuilding America's Defenses. It called for a new Pearl Harbor catastrophe that would throw the American people into a war for global hegemony. These are exactly the words that PNAC Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld used on September 11, 2001. Coincidence? I think not. Thanks to the 9/11 attacks, Richard Pearl and Paul Wolfowitz installed Admiral Arthur Sobrowski in Donald Rumsfeld's shadow. He imposed the strategy of endless war. The U.S. armed forces would not win any more wars, but start many of them and keep them going as long as possible. The aim would be to destroy all the political structures of the targeted states in order to ruin the populations and deprive them of any means of defending themselves against the U.S., a strategy that has been implemented for 20 years in Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Syria, Yemen. Although the Yemenis seem to have come out of it now, haven't they? My goodness. After the destruction of Iraq, the neocons were the subject of all sorts of controversies. The U.S. Congress appointed an Iraq study group, the so-called Baker-Hamilton Commission, to evaluate its policy. It condemned, without naming it, the Rumsfeld-Sobrowski strategy and deplored the hundreds of thousands of deaths that they had caused. But Rumsfeld resigned and the Pentagon inexorably pursued this strategy, which it had never officially adopted. In the Obama administration, they found their way into Vice President Joe Biden's cabinet. His national security advisor, Jacob Sullivan, played a central role in organizing the operations against Libya, Syria, and Myanmar, while another of his advisors, Anthony Blinken, focused on Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Iran. It was he who led the negotiations with Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei that resulted in the arrest and imprisonment of key members of President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad's team in exchange for the nuclear deal. Regime change in Kiev in 2014 was organized by the neocons. Vice President Biden is firmly committed to it. Victoria Nuland came to support the neo-Nazi elements of the right sector and to supervise the Delta Commando in Maidan Square. A telephone intercept reveals her reach to blank the EU, that's the one I just played, in the tradition of the 1992 Wolfowitz Report. But the leaders of the European Union do not understand and protest only weakly. So they don't realize they're being destroyed? You'd think they'd realize it by now. Who's really suffering from all this is the Europeans. The Americans, we Americans are not suffering that much because we aren't the target. Well, we are the target, but in a different way. Jake Sullivan and Anthony Blinken placed Vice President Biden's son, Hunter, on the board of one of the major gas companies, Burisma Holdings. Hunter Biden is unfortunately just a junkie. He would serve as a front for a gigantic scam at the expense of the Ukrainian people. He would appoint, under the supervision of Amos Hochstein, several of his stoner friends to become other frontmen at the head of various companies and to plunder Ukrainian gas. These are the people that President Vladimir Putin called a clique of drug addicts. In 2017, Anthony Blinken founded West Exec Advisors, a consulting firm that brought together former senior administration officials and many neocons. The firm's business is extremely low-key. It uses the political connections of its employees to make money, what anywhere else would be called corruption. So that I'm sure that many of these names you recognize because they're still around, except for, you know, Donald Rumsfeld finally kicked the bucket, but Dick Cheney is still alive. I wonder how many hearts he's gone through. I always wonder where he gets all those hearts. All right, well, anyhow, for some reason, Victoria Nuland is out. Does that mean the neocons are finally losing power? Oh, we could only hope so. I certainly hope so, but we'll see. Anyhow, I hope it means that the neocons are being kicked out at last, they've caused nothing but trouble ever since they showed up, ever since they got wormed their way into government in the 70s. I think you can look back at the Contras, you can look back at Plan B, you can look back at all the wars and all the millions of people that are dead because of these people, and be glad that Victoria Nuland's gone. Let's hope she's gone for good. All right, that's the end of Occupy the Airwaves.